It's been their own. As the penalties start to mount up.
I got to tell you that Cameron Davis, he can fly.
He really can. And he's only a sophomore, too.
Man, has he got some makeup speed. When he hit that guy, I think he put him in the next week.
And where are they hiding him? Nobody knew who he was.
Right.
I didn't even see him in the scrimmage.
Man.
Well, so now it's going to be first and 20. The big gain negated with the clock winding down in the third quarter. They may not get a playoff here. Now another flag down. What is this?
I don't know. Delay a game.
We can hear the coaches from the Red Knights block box screaming, slow it down. There's 7.7 seconds left in the quarter. Delay of game is the call. Ball now at the 20. The first down marker's at the 44-yard line. And there's 7.7 seconds left in the third quarter, so. Comes the snap. It's going to be a pitch left. Oh, he breaks a tackle behind the line there. But he only gets about two or three. And that's going to do it for the third quarter with the black shirts of Waukesha South leading the Red Knights of Milwaukee Lutheran 22-12. We'll be back after these messages here on the Black Shirt Sports Radio Network. And we're back at Pat Falk Stadium. We're about to start the fourth quarter with the black shirts leading the Red Knights of Milwaukee Lutheran, 22-12. It is a second and 23 situation. Ball at their own 21-yard line here. Pistol formation. And Perdzak's looking to pass. He gets out of trouble. He's rolling. He's going to run it. He's got some yardage. He's going to fall down after a 5-yard gain. Oh, and a penalty for a late hurt in the black shirts. I don't know if I agree with that. I don't think there was any contact there. Very little contact. You hate to see that kind of call. The defender deliberately hit the ground, slid to avoid making serious contact there.
He moved to avoid him.
So let's see. They're going to call, illegal, a late hit, a personal foul, and that's going to be an automatic first down, so. You know, we talk about mental mistakes and everything, but you're going at a guy full speed and he takes a knee. You do your best to limit that, and I think they did. There was very little contact.
Yeah,
so.
he jumped over him.
Yep. But I don't think they're not moving. It's still a third down situation, interestingly enough. Usually a personal foul is an automatic first down, but it's third and five, so 11:42 and counting in the game. Blackshirts holding on to a 22-12 lead, a big stand here for our black shirts here. It's a really tight formation. Receiver right. Another receiver goes into the left split. Pistol formation. They give the handoff, though. He's cutting in. He's got some room. Breaks two tackles. And he fights his way to a first down.
Another flag.
But there is a flag. And it is in the backfield. So hopefully some fancy running there by Jameer Clayton Brown, breaking two or three Blackshirt tackles. Blackshirts did a good job of sniffing that out. A well-designed play, but so holding against the Red Knights. Yeah, you feel like that's state troopers on the weekends. They got to get their quota of speeding tickets. I think that's Louise.
Yeah, I mean, there's more laundry out there than Martinizing cleaners.
Yep. So now it goes back to third and 15.
It's crazy. Lots of flags, lots of turnovers, yep. A lot of jitters earlier in the game. You know, I think sure the refs got opening jitters too.
Yeah, 10:56 and counting. We got a single receiver left. Then that flanker goes to the right. There's a quick pass. They got a guy. Oh, they had him, but he breaks a tackle. They get him again, though. About a 6-yard gain. A nice looking call. Someone did a great job of putting a that was Logan Dable.
Logan, yeah, he
got an arm on him, but he broke that. Yeah, he stayed on it, but it slowed him up enough for the rest of the team to come and get him. The Red Knights will punt here from their 35-yard line. Watch the fake. They faked it probably almost half a dozen times at our house last year, although they had a different punter. But Jeremy Knight is your punter. Two guys back for the black shirts. It looks like it's either Cameron Davis or Tyler Williams. Who do you got there, the deep back there, Johnny? Is that number one or a number 10?
Looks like number 10.
Okay, so that's Tyler. Oh, Tyler Williams. No, who's the guy? But Tyler's right there in the...
Yeah, that's Tyler.
But who's the guy behind him? Yeah, Cameron Davis. So
Cameron.
So the way the formation works, it's almost like an I formation on a kick return. Williams is up maybe a good 5 or 10 yards ahead of Davis. So he's going to field the short punt, and Davis will take the long one. Timeout has been called. That's by the Red Knights. That's their second timeout with 9:56 left in the game. So now you got to watch out for a fake here if they're calling a timeout. They may have been getting a look at the defense there or the formation on a punt return. But
We haven't seen one tonight.
That's the second time we've seen that tonight where you'd want to keep both timeouts in your pocket and what looks like an obvious punt call. But they are near midfield, and they do trail by 10 with 9:56 left. So watch out for the fake here. Same formation in the return. Knight's going to punt it. Not a bad punt. Oh, it's fumbled! But it is recovered by the black shirts. No, wait a minute. Yeah, they're saying Williams had it. Red Knights were signaling it was theirs, but that was Cameron Davis who fumbled. Okay, so he switched with Williams on that. Interesting. So black shirts ball at the 44-yard line. 9:47 is your time remaining, Johnny. And I think your keys are play within yourselves.
Yep.
Minimize the penalties. Take some time off this clock. Williams has been running the ball, but you'd like to see them throw under the coverage.
A lot of bobbled balls.
Twins left. It's a handoff to Dunlap going left. He's got some room. He's got a first down.
Boy, nice.
Great tackle, but another great run by Isaiah Dunlap. That looks like a 17-yard gain and a black shirt first down, more importantly. All the way back to about the, it looks like the 39-yard line of the Red Knights, so great run. So Lascano's all alone on the right side. We got a twin package with a flanker close to the line here. Dunlap on Carranza's left there. Stout and Williams on the left in the receiver spots. Stout the split end. And it's Dunlap again. He breaks one tackle. He's got some more room. Another first down. So Isaiah Dunlap is taking over here for the black shirts with a lot of great blocking up front. Clock stops momentarily with 9:10 left, but it'll wind up soon enough, soon as the sticks are set up. So black shirts also working on taking some. Yep, now the clock winding, 9:08 and counting. Black shirts at the line, same formation. Lascano alone on the right, the wide right. Stout and Williams, twins on the short left. Dunlap on Lascano's right. Now Williams goes in motion from the flank. Hand off to Dunlap. This time over the middle. He'll get some short yardage there. Looks like maybe 2 yards. Good stop there by the Red Knight defense. Oh, it's Vinny Mahalo, excuse me. Jamarian Hoffman, 23, and Marcel Island on that tackle for the Red Knights. So second and eight, clock winding, 8:27 and counting. Twins left, Lascano alone on the right. Tail back on Carranza's right. There's the handoff to Capoletti again, and he's not really, not much room there for Capoletti. It might even be a loss there. They give him the line of scrimmage, so. So Dunlap comes back in for Mahalos. 8 minutes and counting. It's a third and nine situation, and if I'm a betting man, Johnny, I'm guessing they're going to Dunlap, although you'd love to see some play action here. Maybe even see Carranza run the ball. Let's see what the Red Knights do here. They have a 5-2 formation.
Your play
he's
action.
Got it. There's a pass. And it's intercepted in the end zone. Well defended. A good play action there, but well defended. Kevin Barnes with the pick. It looked like he was going for, was that Geezy or Stout he was going for there, Johnny?
I think it was Stout.
Evan Stout was the intended receiver, but well covered. Not much Stout could do on that. So at 7:35 in the game, the Red Knights have the ball at their own 20, and a very big stop for them. So it's up to the Black Shirts defense again. And you figure it's time for the Red Knights to get it in gear, so you can't depend on these penalties to save them, to save the Black Shirts. So
that was close.
Here come the Red Knights. They're looking pretty fired up.
Yep, they're inspired. You can see a little mojo.
We got right now I see a single receiver left. Another player comes in. Yeah, we're going to have two flankers. Flanker on each side, close to the line. Actually, a double set here on the right. Pistol formation with Clayton Brown. And another flag down. It's got to be offense here. Probably delay a game. Delay a game, Milwaukee Lutheran. That's got to be their third or fourth of the game, Johnny. Yep.
There's a lot going on there.
That's going to take them back to their own 15.
You know, those delay games are just, they seem so, avoidable, I guess.
Yeah.
You know?
I think you get a lot of, schools this size, like this Black Shirts, you got a lot of guys playing different positions. It can be easy to get confused. There's a handoff, and good. Sniffed out nicely by the Black Shirts, although I guess it is a 5-yard gain, so good power running there. Jameer Clayton Brown again. So clock running, 7:18 left in the game. 22-12 Black Shirt lead over the host nation, Milwaukee Lutheran Red Knights. Second and 10 after that run to the right side. Perdzak back in the huddle now. As the Scarlet Knights come to the line. Scarlet Knights in all maroon, white helmets. Their iconic Knight logo on their helmet. Black shirts in red and white, black helmets. And it's going to be handoff again. Clayton Brown in the middle. And Black shirts do a decent job sniffing it out for another decent gain. But more importantly for the Black shirts, time is running down. 6:30 and counting in the game. It's a 4-yard gain on that run. Again to the right side, third and six. So
once again, some good gang tackling there.
Yeah.
Once they get them, get on them, they really get on them.
And I got a feeling that the Red Knights will run the same play here. If they can get 4 or 5 yards of pop here. I don't know if now is the time to try play action, especially since, again, there's been a lot of mental mistakes for both teams on offense. We got Twins left here. No receivers right. Actually, there's kind of a bunch flank package there on the right. Snap. He's got a guy underneath. Carrelli drops it. He was there.
That was a gainer there.
That was a beautifully designed play.
It really was.
It was what you would call a legal pick play, not an illegal, a legal. Oh, flag is down. What is this?
I think number four had a little colorful language for the referee.
Was that from which team?
The Knights.
The Knights.
Yep. I think. We'll see.
We'll see. It's fourth and six here.
Oh, he's walking it off. Yeah.
They're going to walk it off. So somebody.
I don't think he liked what.
Yep. They're calling it. Is that on Sportsmanlike Conduct with the crossing of the arms? So ball's going to go back to the just past the original line of scrimmage on that. 5:52 is left in the game, I guess. So Jeremy Knight back to punt. Looks like Thrill Williams is back at midfield for the Black Shirts. Here's the punt. A decent looking punt here.
Good punt.
Williams catches it cleanly. He's going to run to the right. And good coverage there by the Red Knights tackling Williams at the 40. So about a 5-yard return. Nice punt by Jeremy Knight. 5:41 is your time remaining in the game as both teams switch units here. Black Shirts will take over in good field position. And Johnny, you got to believe we're gonna be calling Isaiah Dunlop's number a lot here.
You think?
You don't want to go for the kill against a future conference rival in their home opener. And more importantly, again, with the mental mistakes on both sides, I think you keep it simple. Small ball, eat up some clock.
Yes.
Again, 5:41 is your time remaining in the game. So we got Twins left, single receiver right. There's the handoff to Dunlop on the left. He's got Logan Dable pulling for him.
Nice 6-yard run.
Another good run, yeah. And again, I think Dable may have assisted on that tackle there, kind of got in Dunlop's way, unintentionally, of course, but I like the idea of pulling Dable there. He's got great speed on that.
Yes.
So they're calling it a 5-yard gain. Clock runs. 5:19. I thought he might have been out of bounds, so they're getting him to stay in bounds. Black Shirts come back to the line again for second and five. 5:11 and counting left in the game. Black Shirts leading the Red Knights 22-12. Twins left of the flanker over there as well. Single receiver on the wide right. Dunlop on Lascano's left. Carranza taking his time here. Eating some clock. 4:53 and counting here. And I wouldn't get too cute here. Let's get the ball in play. There it is. Hand off to Dunlop. He starts in the middle and goes to the left, and he's got about another 3 or 4 yards.
That's close.
So it looks like a third and one situation here.
We got an injured player on the Knights.
And an injured player on the Knights. He's hobbling off. That's the good news. You know, you figure you'd take a fall there and stop the clock if you're the Knights. 4:23 and counting, third and one. Ball at the 31-yard line of the Red Knights. 4:15 and counting is your time remaining. Here come the Black Shirts, taking their time getting to the line here as we go to 4:06 and counting. Twins left with the flanker tight to the line. Single receiver on the wide right. Dunlop on Carranza's left. Here's a handoff to Dunlop. He powers it up the middle, and
it's first down.
He's got the real estate. Looks like a good 3 or 4 yard gain. They're going to move the sticks. So clock will stop with 3:52. Isaiah Dunlop with another great play. Another hard run. You know, Johnny, and I know we don't give out MVPs here, but gosh, I'd have to cast a vote for Isaiah Dunlop.
Yeah, that'd be my vote.
I know Hector's thrown some beautiful dimes, two beautiful touchdown passes, another long pass, but that running has really created a lot of opportunities. We got a trips right, single receiver left on the short side. And Dunlop is on Carranza's left as the clock's 3:23 and counting. So Black Shirts controlling the clock here. Oh, tough snap. Carranza picks it up. He's running right. He's in trouble. He gets around, though. He's going to throw it away, though. So the good news for the Red Knights is that the mishap stops the clock. Carranza had to throw that away. You know, you wonder if he just takes the fall and the loss of yardage and keeps the clock going.
Yeah.
Especially with the Red Knights having only one timeout left. So instead he gives them another timeout. So, but it's at least it's second and 10, so manageable situation for the Black Shirts offense, looking more to kill the clock than try to get another score here. Although I'd certainly feel better with a game-clinching touchdown. Twins right, single receiver left, a flank left. Zayas DeWalde motion. He gets a handoff left. He goes around end. He's got some yardage. Stay in bounds, Zayas. Nope, I think they get him. They push him out. Nope, clock's still running. So they a decent. They're giving them like a 5-yard run on that. So it's 3rd and 5, 4-yard. Yep. 3rd and 5. Ball is at the 25-yard line with 2:47 and counting remaining in the game. Black Shirts leading the Red Knights of Milwaukee Lutheran 22-12. And you got to believe, Johnny, if they can get the, if they can convert this one, I would say that's the game. Let's see. Stranger things have happened, though. Twins right, single receiver left. Dunlap on Carranza's right. 2:23 and counting. Carranza taking his sweet time here. Zayas to Walton motion. They fake to Zayas. They give it to Dunlap up the middle. Dunlap powers it in. He's going to get some modest yardage, maybe 2 or 3 yards. It's going to create a fourth down here. And I think a timeout's on the field. And it's being called by Milwaukee Lutheran. Their last timeout of the game, trailing by 10 with 2:11 left. And again, stranger things have happened, Johnny, so we can't count the Red Knights out now. We have to remember the very first play of the game, they scored a touchdown in
they did.
10 seconds or less.
We've seen some strange things.
So we'd like to get the conversion here. It's 4th and 4. And I got to tell you, you got to think pass here only in that if we don't convert, or you drop the clock's going to stop anyway if you don't convert.
Right.
So I say you do a play action, keep the Red Knight defense honest, and just find something easy under the coverage, or actually go deep into the end zone, pass the coverage.
I like the way you think, Don. That'd be a good call.
Just don't. No pick sixes. No, you know.
Right. Don't give them
play within yourself.
Don't give anything easy.
Yep.
You know, if you got to throw it away.
It looks like Carranza's back in. He's we got Twins right here. Stout on the left, but he's lined up closer to the line here. Dunlap on Carranza's right. 2:11 remaining. 4th and 4. Big play for both teams here. Says to Walton, motion to the left. Fakes to Dunlap. Carranza rolling out under pressure. He throws it. It's caught. Evan Stout. And Stout's got the first down, I believe.
Yes. He does. Yep.
Evan Stout, All-Classic 8 senior. His first catch of the game, and they needed that. Carranza was under incredible pressure.
He was.
By number 23, Jamarian Hoffman. And kudos. I mean, that was a great defense there, but... And that was dangerous because 2 black shirts went for that ball. So you got to, you know, but they did it. And now 1:48 and counting for the black shirts. Taking their time in the huddle.
Evan
Another Stout great start.
Made a nice athletic move right at the end of that ball when it came in.
He sure did.
He out-muscled that defense.
Yeah.
He did.
And his teammate to get the ball.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
So kind of a trips bunch package here, right? Single receiver all alone. That's Cameron Davis on the left. And 1:21 and counting here. 22-12, Blackshirt lead. And again, Carranza just letting the clock run. And they're going to call timeout here, the Blackshirt. So, you know, they had a couple timeouts to burn here, so the Blackshirts take it. And they got one left with 1:14 left. And we will take a quick break here and stick around for the game. Johnny and I will just do a quick 5-minute post-game here. And but we'll be back after these messages. Do not go away. Back at Pat Falk Stadium, 1:14 left. A 1st and 10 for the Waukesha South Blackshirts, who, if barring any big mistakes or big plays by the Red Knights, should have their first win of the season here. Twins left, single receiver right. Dunlap on Kranz is right. Dunlap's going to get the ball. Logan Dable's pulling. Dunlap's going to take it, and he's touchdown.
No. There's a yes, it is.
It's touchdown. Isaiah Dunlap. Johnny Watermelon trying to steal his thunder on a phantom penalty.
Sorry. It looked like there was a fumble on that. But it wasn't. Dunlap scored.
You know, and a penalty after the play. I don't know what happened there. We'll see. There might have been some unsportsmanlike conduct. And there is a player hobbled for the Red Knights. But in the coach's booth next to us is Isaiah's father, Marty. And I see a big smile on Dad's face. His boy is back and kicking butt. A great, great game for our tailback, our senior tailback.
Yeah, he's looking
after
good.
After some tough, injury-riddled years. So I don't know what the penalty is going to be back. The score will stand. It's 28-12 Blackshirts with 106 remaining. The Red Knights get the unsportsmanlike conduct there. So, and it's got a... And the Blackshirts. So it's offsetting unsportsmanlike conduct penalty. So as we say goodnight to Ben Bodart coming down from the roof above us. But we still have Javi here and Coach Marty on the huddle. Javi Mesa and Coach Marty. So Lemus out for the extra point. Aiden Urban the hold. The snap, the kick. And it splits the uprights again. 29-12 with 106 left. So the Blackshirts get their insurance touchdown, but I think at that point it really wasn't needed.
You know the old saying that it's not over until the fat lady sings?
Well, and again, it's high school, and these guys are they're trying to get some film for college coaches, and that's why Isaiah did it. I don't think it was intended to be a slight. You know, we're going to be conference rivals with these guys next year, so I don't think there'd be any intent to try to give them something to get riled up about. And, you know, our whole experience in the Classic Eight, you know, we'd be down 40 points and guys would still be trying to pound it in.
Yeah, so it's a different deal.
Yep. Well, it's just better competition. Like I said, again, in spite of the score, we had an evenly matched game. Two schools with similar cultures.
Correct. They both certainly had their opportunities,
you know,
here tonight.
Back when there was just one high school in Waukesha, well, high school back then, but the Blackshirts were one of the best teams in the state in a lot of different sports. And as the city grew, so did our school system. And then 20 years ago, we joined the Classic Eight, and those teams got the right and the privilege to poach kids from our schools, especially South. But that'll all be behind us after this season. And, good start for our guys. And some new names, Cameron Davis.
How about that, huh?
What a game for Cameron Davis.
Man, that kid can fly.
He sure can.
Puts a stinger hit on him.
Yep. So we're getting ready to kick off here. Chris Lemus with 106 left. And it's a short kick. It's going to
out of bounds.
Oh, it's out of bounds again. Flag will be thrown. So ball should be spotted at the 35, I think. So. Yeah, you know, and the last time he kicked it out of bounds, it really didn't look like we got penalized for it. Like the ball was marked where the ball went out of bounds.
Yeah.
I believe usually when that happens, it's like the ball's marked at the 35 or the 40. I think that's the NFL rule. And college is similar. So Red Knights have it at the 35, 106 remaining. Got to move quick to get on the board and maybe get the ball back. You mathematically, they would need three scores to win. So, but here they come. Blackshirts were huddled pretty far from the ball there.
You think?
But it's a good thing the Red Knights didn't start early with that. That no-huddle K-gun offense.
All right.
Hey, before this game ends, I want a big shout-out. The broadcasting world was struck with a big blow last night with the death of Rick Jenneret, longtime hockey broadcaster, one of the legends. He was here's a running play here. And, oh, he breaks a tackle.
He could go, Don.
This is your guy.
Out of the room.
Here comes Hector Carranza. No, Carranza gets him down. He stumbles, but great pursuit by Carranza. Jamir Clayton Brown with a huge run. Stops the clock at 55.8 while they wait for the chain gang. So Knight's not really hustling to get to the ball, but again, I think since the game's academic.
He doesn't stumble on
they're
that.
They're going to huddle here. Yeah.
He goes in.
Now the clock's running here. So here comes Perdzik back from the line. He gets the calls right from the coach. Here they come. 42 seconds and counting, a 29-12 black shirt lead. And what it looked like a black shirt victory here. 33 and counting. Twins right. Pistol formation. Now receiver goes to the left in motion. Short snap. He's looking deep. No, he decides to run, and he slides down in front of Carranza. That'll be about a five-yard gain with 16 seconds left, and that should do it. I don't know if they'll have time to line up for a play. So they're going to hustle back. They're going to try to get one more off here. Times are running. Why not? Hut, hike. Get it. There it is. There's the snap. Last play of the game. They're going to the end zone on a corner pattern.
No, short. But
receiver went left. Ball went right. So that'll do it. That's the black shirts win their opening game at Milwaukee North, 29-12. Congratulations to Coach Darnell Wiltz and the team as the teams get together to shake hands. And Johnny, in these last 5 minutes before we break, you know, what are your thoughts?
Well, my observations here, a couple things. One is I saw a lot of no-huddle football today.
Okay? Yeah, I like that.
And I thought that kind of was very interesting, kind of picked up the pace.
Sure.
So that was cool. And Isaiah Dunlap, man.
Great to see him.
He just really can run like the Dickens arrow.
He sure
so
has.
Proud of him.
Great to see him in full health.
Yep. And Cameron Davis, wherever he was hiding, he
Sophomore.
He came out and he put some licks on some guys tonight. I saw his recovery speed.
He looked like a senior tonight.
He just really is flying around there.
He sure
did.
So
those are my three things that I wanted to take out of tonight's game. How about you, Don?
Well, first I want to thank our sponsor, Mia's, for their support for Black Shirt Football. And looking forward to getting a meal over there. I might even get over there on Sunday, Johnny. But, just a great. You know, there was a lot of talk going into the season about whether or not they're going to have a team. They said they were short on numbers, but as you can see, you know, they got 33, 34 players. And there were a lot of stars. Justin Primetime Geezy, Logan Dable.
Yeah.
There's some real weapons at it. It's tragic that they don't get to play in the Parkland this year. So, but they're going to have some fun in the Classic Eight, and they got one more game. Next week they host Ellsworth, and I want to give you a heads up. That's a 6 o'clock start. Coverage will start right at 6, so there won't be a pregame, but there will be a lot of special moments of that game. It's alumni night, and there is an honorary captain that will be honored as part of the team. That's all I'm going to say. That should also be a wonderful moment for Black Shirt Nation. And, you know, I really liked Hector Carranza showed me a lot with the long ball.
Yeah.
A couple beautiful touchdown passes, and that strike to Cameron Davis, that was almost a touchdown.
Dude, I'm telling you, he's got a missile launcher.
There was just some good, you know, big plays. And the big thing, too, is they gave up a touchdown on the first play of the game, which, again, that can take the wind out of anyone's sails. I mean, that's been our experience in the Classic Eight. But our boys bounced back. They showed a lot of character, and they had that, you know, that drive that set up the first touchdown. And some great defensive stands deep in their own territories after some self-inflicted mistakes. And also bouncing back after some great defensive plays resulting in turnovers for the Scarlet Knights. So, again, I look forward to playing these guys every year. Good kids, great coaches, good culture here at the school. Thanks again to Athletic Director Todd Albers and all his crew here. And, best of luck to the Red Knights and for their season. And catch the action next week when the Blackshirts host Ellsworth. Again, it's an early start, so the Ellsworth kids can leave earlier. And don't forget to catch my show tomorrow, This Week in Waukesha, 8 a.m., where my guest is our state representative for most of Waukesha, Assemblyman Scott Allen. The fun starts at 8, so we'll see you then. And thank you. Remember, safety is everyone's responsibility. Go Blackshirts, and see ya!
See ya!
sadly, you know, workers are kind of, you know, behind the eight ball to begin with. Even though right now we are seeing some activity, you know, these losses still, as you point out, people remember the pain and the suffering and the struggling, even that far back. And, you know, look, this happened in 1985, 86. This is a while ago, but the people here that I talk to, they still remember it.
Yeah, absolutely. And in part, they remember because of what happened next in the story, which is that so the Ottumwa workers, in their contract, there was language that supported their ability to honor picket lines. And so when Austin workers said, sent roving pickets down, they sent them other places, but Ottumwa was the most successful, sent them down here, and the workers overwhelmingly honored them. But then the company fired them all, virtually all of them. So this is like 500
down
people,
here,
roughly
500 people.
And the workers and, overwhelmingly honored but then the company
both
fired
the production
them all.
And actually this is something
virtually all of them.
Forgotten.
So this is like 500
down
people.
Here,
local
and,
there had organized as well many of the clerical staff. And so, you know, they fired everybody who honored the picket lines. Immediately, the workers in Ottumwa began to fight that in court. But of course, you know, they had to immediately also contend with the fact that they'd all been fired. It was both an incredible act of solidarity on the part of Ottumwa workers, but it drew them closer to the strike. But it was also, as I say, you know, as you were saying, you know, again, another kind of trauma where people had to suddenly contend with being put out of work unexpectedly.
So let me ask you this, Jonathan, because, you know, sure. Again, you see what this company did and we know the history of it and what they got away with. How much of this was, you know, the Reagan era, you know, firing of the PATCO workers? Because I say that was kind of the shot heard across the boardroom to empower these companies to really take what they were trying to do in the 70s to that next level. And this Hormel strike, along with Phelps Dodge and some of the others, you know, they really put their foot on the necks of working people during this period.
I think it's a really good example of that extra layer of power, right? You know, that for a long time, I think that they, you know, these corporate leaders, you know, they sort of looked over their shoulder and still thought that perhaps there were some of these kind of New Deal era guardrails in place. And I think, as you say, that, you know, the firing of the PATCO workers did become this kind of shot heard around the boardrooms, where they recognized that those guardrails were no longer there, and that they had the leverage in order to do what they wanted to do. Which, you know, for my money, my professional opinion is that that there was never really much of a detente, that these corporate leaders never really, in many ways, accustomed themselves to unions and were always, for the most part, looking for opportunities to rid themselves of the need to negotiate with their workers, and this becomes a powerful opportunity for them.
Yeah, you're listening to the Rick Smith Show with John McCurley. John's a labor historian at the University of Iowa Labor Center. If you want to check out the work they do, laborcenter.uiowa.edu. We'll get links out on social media how you can take a look at that. Now, John, you know, we're in this interesting time because, you know, labor's approval ratings at an all-time high. Young people are coming back to it. You know, these kind of things are forgotten. If anyone, you know, it's just old guys like me who remember these things. The message going forward, are there lessons in this to be taken forward? Are there things that, you know, that should be shared? I'm curious, you know, given the situation we're in now, what do you take from that era moving forward?
What I take hope from is that, you know, that as much power as was thrown at workers, like in places like Ottumwa or any of these kind of small, medium-sized cities, especially, that have been so hollowed out by neoliberalism over the last several decades, is that you know, there still are a lot of there are a lot of union members still here of many generations fighting together to improve their communities, right? That regardless of the incredible power that these employers and the money that they have available to them have thrown at these places, they have not destroy the labor movement. You know, it may not be, and it may not be the kind of places that oftentimes get coverage, and sometimes it's forgotten about or ignored, the continued presence of labor, but it is still here, and the heartbeat of it continues. And you know, you saw it, say, for example, in the incredible solidarity around the recent John Deere strike, right? You know, it's an example of the fact that labor is still here, still fighting every day, and you know, that's what I take hope from.
No, and this is, you know, the strength that we see on the Ingredion picket line in Cedar Rapids, and you know, also the Case New Holland strike over in Burlington. This is a no rights at work state, and you can't forget that Iowa has been a no rights at work state for a very long time, and yet you still have this kind of power that workers, you know, are able to join together. Not at the levels that I'm used to growing up in Ohio or living in Pennsylvania, but still there are strong union ties in these communities.
Well, and one of the things that oftentimes gets that, I mean, it is obviously, it's quite true, right? We've been a right to work state almost since Taft Hartley, right? 1947. There are a lot of locals, you know, particularly in the private sector in manufacturing, some of them have almost 100% density, right? So like a local that I'm working with right now, one of these John Deere locals, 450 out of Ankeny, they have almost 100% density, right? So it's an example of how in certain contexts, even in a right to work state, there are incredibly powerful locals that have been able to build really strong contracts. I mean, increasingly they are really siloed, right? Like in the old days, they would have like three or four of those in a community, and they would be able to draw on that power locally in order to project it in ways that are really difficult now. But those places still exist even in Iowa.
No, and this is where I keep coming back to, you know, the lesson of Ottumwa and the people that I talk to here is just what you just said. There were multiple factories, multiple places where unions were strong, and you had these communities that were union communities. Even the people who weren't working the jobs and in the unions were strong supporters of those workers having rights to collective bargain, to rights to better wages, hours, and conditions, because they knew it trickled down to everyone else. And it was a community thing. And this is where my mind keeps coming back to, and why I think places like Ottumwa are so important to look at, because this model has to be replicated, and we have to return to an era where we start thinking about each other, you know, like much more like my grandparents' generation did, who built the most prosperous working class in the history of civilization by doing the hard work that you see in these places.
Yes. And the thing that I think is particularly, I think it's true in true in lots of places around the country, but particularly here in Iowa, right, where we don't have a Chicago, we don't have a Minneapolis, we don't have a Toledo, or we are a state of small cities in many ways, right? And those small cities have been particularly hurt by deindustrialization, right? Where you might have the local economy might have been, a couple of local factories that were unionized, maybe a small college, in some cases unionized actually at one point, community college, you know, local school system, and then, you know, systematically those feet of the stool have been kicked out, and that's been crippling to many of these communities, but. As I say, you know, there continues to be these living labor movements in these places that continue to struggle. And I really think that if we're going to save democracy in this country, it's going to be through the labor movement, and it's going to be through sustaining the labor movement in these small cities and communities where, you know, they're the heart of democracy.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. In fact, you know, the tour that we're doing, this Working Class Heroes radio tour, the premise started right there. And I tell the story all the time, John, that, you know, on election night 2020, I wasn't watching election results. I was leading a strike of 55 warehouse workers who, you know, three quarters of them that afternoon voted for Donald Trump. But in that moment on that picket line, and they were, you know, a microcosm of America, you know, white, black, male, female, gay, straight, they were all of that. They were united in what I say is the right fight, the righteous fight. It's not which hat you bought, the red or the blue or the right or the left. It was up, down. They were looking up at this huge corporation who was making billions of dollars of profits while telling them, no, we can't pay your health care. No, we can't give you a raise. No, we can't make your lives better. And they said, no, we're going to stick together and we're going to move forward. And in that, they were all together in this country, as divided as we are told we are. They were as diverse as their political backgrounds. They were all united in that one struggle. And I think you're right, and I've been saying it as well. This is how we reunite, re-energize, and revive this country.
Yeah, I can't say anything better than that.
So I guess last line of questioning I've got for you then, because you know we're in this, obviously in this moment. Are there lessons going forward? And I know I asked this before, because there are so many people who don't know what you do at the Labor Center there at the University of Iowa. I get people all the time who listen to our Labor History in Two segments, and they say, wow, I didn't know that. You know, how do I find more information? How do we educate our children? There's so much thirst and want for, you know, what our labor history has been. Are there any lessons in what we've been talking about for people moving forward? And how we move and organize and do the things that need to be done in the future?
There's a lot. I mean, I'll just turn this, you know, specifically in the direction of labor education. And so, you know, what the Labor Center where I work, you know, primarily is staffed with labor educators. And what they do is they go out and they provide all sorts of education needs to popular education needs to workers all around the state. In fact, they're the only institution in what's our Regents system. So that's the state university system here in Iowa that is specifically directed at worker education. And they've been doing that for 70 years. Unfortunately, there was a turn that pulled away state funding from that single center that's directed at worker education. And so we continue here in Iowa to fight to preserve the demanded for again and again right of workers to have some part of their state university system providing to them the access to the education that they need to preserve their rights at work, right? And so, you know, those sorts of centers like Iowa, the attacks on them, it's not just here, right? It's all over the place. In fact, in some cases, it's also in states that have, say, Democratic governors and Democratic majorities. You know, it is bigger than just one political party.
Yep.
One of the things that we need to do as we fight to preserve the labor movement is we also need to fight to preserve labor education, because it serves a critical role in as I say, you know, making sure that workers have the education they need in order to build the world they want to build.
Yeah, so spot on. John, I appreciate you taking time for us, sharing your thoughts. I hope you'll come back and talk to us again real soon.
Would love to. Thank you very much, Rick.
Good stuff. Appreciate it. John McCurley, labor historian at the University of Iowa's Labor Center. Make sure you check out their website, laborcenter.uiowa.edu. We'll get links out on social media, how you can take a look at that. Can take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. Listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to the best of the Rick Smith Show. Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
You're listening to the best of the Rick Smith Show. We will be returning on
as we finish up our time here in Ottumwa. And I want to thank the good folks here at UAW Local 74 for opening up your hall to us, and all the folks who came down to say hello, and all the people who've just been so gracious with their time. All the folks who were just really wonderful while we were here, and of course the people at the canteen, also the people at Bubba Q's, had a great meal there as well. Lots of things here that are just memories I'm going to carry with me. But again, thanks to Jason Ewing, the president of UAW Local 74 here, for opening up their time. And of course, Heidi, thank you for bringing us here and all the work that you did to help get folks out to come and talk with us. It's people like that that help our program and help us grow and thrive and survive and do all of that. Now, the tour continues. We're going to be taking a six-hour journey north up to Eau Claire, Wisconsin, and that's going to be there's a lot of stuff going on, from what I understand, in Eau Claire. So we're going to look forward to that. Our good friend Pat Kreitlow is going to have a whole bunch of people for us to talk with. I'm looking forward to that. All I know about Eau Claire right now is that the Uniroyal plant used to be there, and what came out of that era. Like a lot of cities, like Eau Claire, like Ottumwa, where I grew up in Cleveland, deindustrialization destroyed a prosperous working class. But here, like here, they're finding other ways to make it. Like a lot of the cities that we've been to, they're finding their way. They're finding new industries. They're innovating. They're using the grounds in more creative ways. I have some hope. I have some hope that we're gonna be okay. And as the folks here in Ottumwa have given me, just wonderful thoughts and how we move forward. But I would love to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If there's something you go, hey, this is a place you should be talking about, this is a place you should go, we would love to hear it. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you miss any portion of our tour, you can find where we've been and also where we're going. Just go to thericksmithshow.com, where you can find that and participate in the grand tour.
You're listening to The Shaw. WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.